Tom Woods Show, episode 796.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Let me tell you, first of all, what's coming up tomorrow before I even get into today's topic. Tomorrow, I've got Umberto Fontova coming on to talk about Fidel Castro. I realize we're a little bit late, but that's partly because Umberto was out on a hunting trip when Castro died, and then it was a matter of trying to line him up on a day that would work for both of us, and so we finally made it work. I've already recorded it. It's one of my favorite episodes of the show of all time, and I know I do say that sometimes, but not that much, considering there are nearly 800 episodes. I think you're really going to like it. It's just the thing you've been waiting for. It addresses all the claims you've heard, and it's done in a really, really interesting and invigorating way. Umberto is a very, very good interviewee. I'll just put it that way. You're really going to enjoy episode 797. That's not to say you're not going to enjoy episode 796, the one you are listening to at this very moment. Today, I thought I would just run through an article I saw. I'm on the American Spectator's email list. I don't know how I got on it, but I'm still on it. Some email lists I jump off and others I stay on. Stay on this one because once in a while they send me an interesting headline. And this article that I want to talk to you about is by Ben Stein, who is the well-known actor. And before that, he was a speechwriter for Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford. He has an article called Secession is for Morons. And I thought, oh, man, come on now. Come on now. What is this all about? And he is saying that he's outraged that there are people. It's not even that he's outraged. He is contemptuous. Let's say it that way. He's contemptuous of people in California who are saying that the election of Donald Trump really should spur us to think about secession. And obviously, California is a wealthy state, and it would be one of the biggest economies in the world, even as an independent state. So this is stupid, according to Ben Stein. Why is it stupid? Well, he says, they don't know history. Oh, boy. So now we're going to get a history lesson from Ben Stein. And he says, the ultimate in idiocy is this idea that California should and could secede from the rest of the Union and become a separate country. And he says, it's almost unbelievable, and yet it's also fascinating in a macabre way. He says, the idea that a state could secede was what led South Carolina to proclaim secession as soon as Lincoln was elected in 1860. In short order, South Carolina was joined in this strange idea by, and then he goes on and lists some of the southern states. And then he says, if it had not been for Lincoln's arresting state officials, Kentucky and Maryland would have seceded too, and that would have been the end of the USA as we know it. All right, let's stop right there. In short order, South Carolina was joined in this strange idea. Strange idea. What strange idea is that? The idea of self-determination. The idea that a people should not be kept in a political association that it does not want, if I may quote Ludwig von Mises. That is the strange idea. Now, of course, that strange idea ought to sound rather familiar to Americans who withdrew from the British Empire in the 18th century to form their own political association. That was a strange idea, if we are to believe Ben Stein. And then he cheers the fact that Lincoln arrested state officials because, hey, you got to do what you got to do. That would have been the end of the USA as we know it. All right, but you know what? I'm going to utter the ultimate heresy, and I'm going to say, so freaking what? So what is what I would say. The United States is not a god to worship. It is a practical, utilitarian arrangement. And let's try to have a little bit of imagination, as I've proposed in the past. Suppose there were two places now in the geographical area we now call the United States. Suppose it had become two places, perhaps even more. But let's say it become two places. Would both of them have intervened in World War I, which almost certainly contributed to the situation that led to World War II? Would there have been two Woodrow Wilsons? Probably not. Would the 20th century have been a vastly better time? And would there have been far, far fewer people killed? Almost certainly. Would both of these geographical locations have had the same crazy interventionist policy in the Middle East? Maybe not. And so maybe the world would be more stable and safer today. In other words, there are a lot of goods that could have come out of this. Maybe both places wouldn't have entitlements that are completely impossible to fund and are going to blow up in everybody's faces. In other words, everything that we're living through now that's horrible and unimaginably bad might not have been replicated in both places or three or four places. But we're not allowed to think that because this is a strange idea. What's normal is the idea that everybody should live in a gargantuan country. It's normal to think 320 million people maybe, who have very, very significant disagreements with each other, who in many cases can't stand the sight of each other. It's normal that they should all be ruled by one city in a one-size-fits-all manner. That's normal. But a situation in which some people say, you know, we just can't go along with what our fellow countrymen are saying, and maybe it would be better for us to separate peacefully and each go our separate way rather than trying to shove one approach to life down the throat of the other. That's not normal. That's strange. That's strange, according to Ben Stein. It's strange that we should have this thought that we might want to try to live in peace instead of trying to force everybody into the same cookie-cutter mold. See, I think that's normal. I think it's strange that because I think of what we learn in school, we are programmed to think that the indivisible large nation-state that is its own justification, it's a self-justifying goal. I think we're propagandized into believing that, and I think that's strange. Because I think the normal human response to this, if you hadn't been propagandized about one nation indivisible your whole life, would be to say, well, if we don't get along, we should go our separate ways. Nobody would have thought, let's call out the army to force the Beatles to stay together. Because we all know the Beatles together are better than the Beatles as individuals. Well, that probably is true, by the way. You can argue that. But I wouldn't want to kill 620,000 people to vindicate that view. So I don't think it's strange that we might want to separate when we have obviously irreconcilable differences. Now here's an interesting concession by Ben Stein, however. Interesting concession. He says, the amazing thing is that there is nothing in the Constitution forbidding secession. Ah, well, that's okay, at least he admits that, which, by the way, automatically proves it's constitutional. So he doesn't try to say it's unconstitutional. He doesn't. And not only that, he says there's never been a Supreme Court case saying secession is illegal. Look for it. Go ahead. You won't find it. Well, there he's wrong. Texas versus White, 1869. So he's wrong about that. But to heck with that. The states created the federal government, and by extension, the federal courts. They can't have their own creation tell them what they're allowed to do, what they're not allowed to do. So you can ignore that. In fact, let me cite here a post of my own. I'm typing this in. I could just edit this out of the episode, but doggone it, I am not going to. I'm going to go to my site for a post from early 2011. James Madison, states need recourse against courts. This is, now, it's, I'm not saying Madison was a big secession supporter, but, you know, the implications of what somebody says are important. Let me read you this little passage from Madison from his famous report of 1800. And you'll see what I mean about how the states are ultimately the players here, not the courts. And he's saying, the resolution of the General Assembly, he's talking about the Virginia resolutions of 1798, which spoke about the power of Virginia to interpose between the federal government and the people of Virginia when the federal government exceeds its authority. It says, the resolution of the General Assembly relates to those great and extraordinary cases in which all the forms of the Constitution may prove ineffectual against infractions dangerous to the essential rights of the parties to it. The parties to it, of course, are the states. The resolution supposes that dangerous powers not delegated may not only be usurped and executed by the other departments, but that the judicial department also may exercise or sanction dangerous powers beyond the grant of the Constitution, and consequently, that the ultimate right of the parties to the Constitution, again the states, to judge whether the compact has been dangerously violated, must extend to violations by one delegated authority as well as by another, by the judiciary as well as by the executive or the legislature. So in other words, the states have to have recourse against the judicial branch, not just the other two branches. He says, however true, therefore, it may be that the judicial department is, in all questions submitted to it by the forms of the Constitution, to decide in the last resort, this resort must necessarily be deemed the last in relation to the authorities of the other departments of the government, not in relation to the rights of the parties to the constitutional compact, from which the judicial as well as the other departments hold their delegated trusts. So in other words, Madison is saying that even if we may say that what the judicial department has to say is the final say as compared to the other two branches, you know, vis-a-vis the other two branches, it is not the final say vis-a-vis the court and the states, the creators of the union. And then he goes on to say, on any other hypothesis, the delegation of judicial power would annul the authority delegating it, and the concurrence of this department with the others in usurped powers might subvert forever and beyond the possible reach of any rightful remedy the very Constitution which all were instituted to preserve. So what I'm arguing in citing these passages is that even if there is a Texas versus White, that's ultimately not relevant, given that the Supreme Court can't be superior to the states in the same way that Frankenstein's monster cannot be superior to Dr. Frankenstein. The creator is in charge of the created thing. Anyway, let's get back to the article. So he says, nothing in the Constitution forbidding secession, never been a Supreme Court case. Then he says, but the will of the people is that we stay together as a union. And it was that will, greatly compounded by the wish of many to end slavery, that led to the bloodiest war in U.S. history. More than 600,000 men died to keep the Union together and to free the slaves. We'll get to the slaves in a minute, but how about that? The will of the people cannot be questioned. The will of the people, that's what we say to 600,000 deaths. Well, it was the will of the people. Maybe the will of the people is perverse. Plus, how do you know that's the will of the people? People weren't allowed to speak their minds during the war. People were thrown in jail for speaking against the war. Tom DiLorenzo will tell you all about that in his book, The Real Lincoln, but any reputable historian will tell you all about that. So how do we know what the will of the people was? There were a lot of Northern newspaper editorials at the time that said, let the South go. It would contradict every single thing we stand for to engage in a violent suppression of their withdrawal from the Union. Now, I've done an episode, I guess I'll have to link to it. I've done at least one episode, probably more, on secession, but where I go through point by point the arguments in favor. And the arguments are just overwhelming in favor of secession, both in an American context and as a more or less general principle. So I won't rehearse all that here because I've already covered it. And you'll enjoy those episodes, I'm fairly sure. So I won't go through all that. But the will of the people just seems like such a weirdly, I don't really quite know what the word is, but seems like a much too benign sounding phrase to cover over 600,000 deaths. And actually recent revisions of the deaths actually get them closer to 800,000, in fact. But all the same, the will of the people demanded it. All right. Well, these are pretty bloodthirsty people. I mean, how do you... Just seems like a morally obtuse thing to say. Sure, 600,000 people died, but what were you going to do, right? The people demanded it. And then slavery. Well, it's not too difficult to demonstrate that neither side really felt like it was fighting for anything that had anything to do with slavery. If you actually read the diaries and the letters that were written home, the correspondence that were written by Northern and Southern participants in the war, what you find is that they were basically fighting for patriotic principles. And they both sides thought they were fighting for what the founding fathers had given them. And what was that? Well, in the northern case, founding fathers left us this union. And in the southern case, the founding fathers left us the principle of self-determination, that, you know, when an oppressive situation overwhelms you, you can have your own. You can go your own way. That is also a principle of the founding fathers. Now, we can tell, we don't have to guess what people were writing home and what they were saying to their loved ones or what they were writing in their diaries, because we actually have a whole work of history devoted to precisely this question. And that is a book by James McPherson, who is not by any means pro-South or anything, such thing as that. He's very much a very heavily pro-abolitionist historian. But his book, For Cause and Comrades, Why Men Fought in the Civil War, does cover this. He goes into the documentary literature and shows what the reasons given were. In fact, let me write that down, For Cause and Comrades. So I'll put that on the show notes page, put my episodes on secession, put the DiLorenzo book on Lincoln there. All right, let's go back to Ben Stein. Let's keep on talking here. That is not Ben Stein. Here we are. Okay. Then he says, do the morons who are proposing secession here in sunny Cal have any idea of just how serious a matter this is? Obviously, there is no issue on the table remotely as morally compelling as ending slavery. What is even remotely worth even the possibility of fighting another civil war? All right, this is so confused. This is so confused, I really don't know where to start. So he begins by saying, there's no issue on the table remotely as morally compelling as ending slavery. Okay, but since ending slavery had nothing to do with Lincoln's decision to launch the war, any historian will tell you that. Any historian. He was very, very blunt about that. He wanted to preserve the Union. So what he should say is, there is no issue on the table remotely as morally compelling as saving the Union, maybe, because that's what the war was fought over. And by the way, that's not at all to say that the South wasn't at all thinking about slavery when it seceded. These are two entirely different questions, by the way. The secession and the war. Yes, no doubt the Southern states were thinking about slavery, at least some of them. Some of them were thinking about slavery when they seceded. But that's a very different question about why was the war fought. And people conflate these things, as Ben Stein obviously does, because he can't even keep conceptually distinct in his mind the ideas of secession and civil war. He's saying to California, look, what could possibly be worth another civil war? But who says that it has to be a civil war? Why can't we be civilized for a change? There have been peaceful secessions in the history of the world. Norway and Sweden, for example, or the secessions of the former Soviet republics. These things have been able to happen peacefully. The secession of Slovenia. There's no reason that secession and civil war have to go hand in hand, but I think a lot of Americans associate those things together because I think the civil war, or as it's so-called civil war, is taught to them, I think, is intended to confuse the issue. So let's go back and look at that. Those words again. I just can't get over this. So there's no issue on the table remotely as morally compelling as ending slavery. Okay, but again, the whole war issue, the whole thing came to war not over slavery. It came to war over the desire to preserve the Union. So there wouldn't have been a war if the decision had been made, look, let's let the South go, and maybe sometime in the future we'll rejoin. But it's certainly not worth hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people dying and people starving to death and all that, having their towns destroyed. It's not worth doing that. No, that wasn't the approach that was taken, but it could have been taken. Could have been taken. And then he says, what is even remotely worth even the possibility of fighting another civil war? Well, that would be up to the federal government to decide, wouldn't it? It would be up to the federal government to decide whether there's going to be a civil war over the decision of a whole bunch of people, millions of people, to form their own political society. They wouldn't be using force. They would be making a peaceful decision. Whether civil war occurs is entirely, in the hands of the federal government. And so what we should be saying is that there won't be any civil war because in the federal government we will have civilized people who realize that other civilized people resolve their differences peacefully and they don't use violence. So why does Ben Stein think that the very possibility of a California secession, which I consider highly unlikely but not impossible, necessarily involves civil war? If the federal government was going to come in with tanks, maybe they would just stand down and not do it. There doesn't have to be civil war, but California is not going to go around shooting. They're not going to have Californian troops shooting people in Montana or going to try to overthrow the government in Washington, D.C. They just want to be left alone. Any violence would be entirely on the side of the federal government. So if Ben Stein is so concerned about the possibility of a civil war, he shouldn't be lecturing Californians. He should be lecturing the savages in the federal government who he apparently believes would engage in violence. Well, then talk to them. There's just no imagination in Ben Stein at all when it comes to this. And it's true of almost everybody, unfortunately. Our moral imagination has been stunted by the propagandists. They cannot imagine the idea of decentralization. They cannot imagine that maybe living in a great big country isn't its own justification. And he goes on to say, the country is nutty enough as it is. Let's just go eat some hot dogs down at Carbon Beach and forget silly ideas like secession. Well, my view is the country is nutty enough as it is. That's why we should let California go. Half the nuts live there. But yeah, the country is nutty enough as it is. Let's forget silly ideas like secession. Why are they silly? Because they're not on the 3x5 card of allowable opinion. That's why. There's obviously nothing in and of itself silly about the idea of some people wanting to withdraw from a larger confederation because they think they would be better served governing themselves. There's obviously nothing silly about that. That is the very height of common sense. There's nothing silly about that. It's silly only because Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi don't think we ought to be talking about it, but why would I want to take dictation from them? And then he says, and maybe, just maybe, the schools could start teaching history. The Ben Stein history is a comic book in which there are bad people in the states and good people running the federal government, and sometimes those bad people need to be hit with a hammer, and it's a good thing we handed those hammers to the people in the federal government because they're wise and wonderful. I guess if you're a Nixon and Ford speechwriter for a while, you'd start to believe stuff like that. But in fact, the schools, if they were to start teaching history, it would be to teach the opposite of what Ben Stein wants taught. What Ben Stein is talking about is being taught everywhere. Everybody believes what he believes about secession and slavery, but particularly about secession. It's stupid. Well, I will give him credit. At least he admits that the Constitution doesn't forbid it. So, I mean, that's better than most schools. But we really should have schools that teach real history. And incidentally, I might point out to you, by the way, that starting today, we're actually running a bit of a special on the master membership at libertyclassroom.com, which is where you get lifetime access to all the courses we produce, where we teach real history, not the phony baloney Ben Stein version or Nancy Pelosi version, but the real thing, plus economics and stuff, plus all the 400 and something videos I did for the Ron Paul curriculum. For the courses that I made for that, that's all thrown in as a bonus. We're running a December special through December 30th, 2016. So you can check that out at libertyclassroom.com. Grab that because as of December 31st, boom, it goes right back up to the regular price. You save a bundle right now. So check that out at libertyclassroom.com. I think that's pretty much all I had to say about this article, but I wanted to get it off my chest, and now I've done that. Well, tomorrow, Umberto Fontova joins us, and man, are we going to have some fun talking about Fidel Castro, the real history of Castro, the phony baloney version you get in Hollywood and the media, and also we're going to talk about Umberto's own family experience because he and his family got out of Cuba in 1961, so it's an interesting story all around. I hope you'll join me for it. Episode 797. Today's show notes page is tomwoods.com/796. Where I will link to books that I mentioned in this episode, as well as previous episodes relating to secession. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.